Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to begin boarding. If we could ask for your cooperation, would you all please remain seated?
Well, how'd you sleep last night?
I don't believe that's any of your business.
If you go to a Banshee Fall and you want to have a Prance and Hansel all in fub with you, don't forget to slop your dripper.
Mr. Neidlinger, what's for breakfast?
Dude, apples, bacon, and biscuits.
Well, forget the apples. Slap some bacon on a biscuit. Let's go.
You're on the High Ground with Craig Flowers.
Good morning, Ty. As Sirius said to me last night, welcome to Abilene. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Allons-y! Good morning, Texans, and everybody get here as fast as you possibly can. Oh, but remember why you're coming, and remember what you left, and don't mess with Texas. Yes, indeed, there are a lot of states that are great, but as we know, there's only one great state.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Live, local, and digital, AM 1260, 1019, and 1049, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Welcome to the High Ground. My name is Craig Flowers. We are talking to you live in studio from the banks of 360, although I am in Abilene, Texas, home of the Air It Out Football Camp. This weekend is the Air It Out Football Academy, where we are hosting approximately 40 quarterbacks and 40 receivers all across the great state, parts of New Mexico, Colorado, a couple from Oklahoma, but predominantly from the great state, here being developed as young men of character who happen to play football. And coaching the quarterbacks is the great Cody Hodges, who played quarterback in Hereford, Texas, at Hereford High, and then went on to lead the nation in passing at Texas Tech, played for Mike Leach, and of course, handling the receivers, a Longhorn legend, the great David Thomas, who wore a couple of numbers as part of the University of Texas football team. Number 16 was one of them, who later went on to play in two Super Bowls, one with the Patriots and winning one with Drew Brees, your Westlake Chaparral, who would have had no career if it weren't for the injury of Johnny Rogers. On the heels of the Big Ugly Tailgate, this is the High Ground. This is our first hour of our one-hour show, and seated to my right, your left, creating the mirror effect, is the pride of East Austin. The UC Davis corner back, the voice of the Texas Wine of the Week. He has 10 combat deployments as a special operations helicopter pilot. There's nobody like him. You love him, Jamie Frazier. I'm not talking about Jamie Frazier.
What's going on, Colonel?
I am... I had to get borrow a car to get across the Red River because evidently there's a nationwide shortage of wheel bearing units that went out. My wheel bearing unit went out of my left front wheel of my 2018 Ford F-150. So I have a F-150 sitting in a driveway where I had to borrow a Ford Explorer to come to Abilene last night. I'm staying at the Witten Inn. For those of you that have not stayed in the Witten Inn in Abilene, boy, you are missing out on something. The saying is, purr like a kitten, stay at the Witten. There's nothing like waking up with some of Abilene's finest in the Witten Inn, Jamie. Pretty remarkable. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Just watching a little PGA golf up here, seeing if Tiger, or see if Jordan's going to do anything today. But yeah, good day. It's going to be about 100 degrees out there, 97 degrees. How's it? What's the weather like up there in beautiful Abilene?
It's about 60 degrees this morning. And I had a little light windbreaker on, as a matter of fact, as all the parents and players were coming. This is a unique weekend in that we have what we call the bigs and the littles together. So we have the ninth, 10th, and 11th graders. Those that will go into their senior year, the 11th graders. And then we have the younger, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders together. So this is the opportunity for the bigs to sort of sponsor and pass on the baton, if you will, to some of the littles. But man, I tell you, our great state is in has no shortage of quarterbacks and receivers, and all of these kids. You know, I was listening to the great Craig Way last night at the KU baseball game that Texas won 8-1 going away. Really, it was no in the first inning. I mean, you were there in the Sweet Life, Jamie. You got to see the number of home runs that were hit. It was just, you know, one home run after another. It seemed like it was a really clean game by the Longhorns. They have won 38 games now, and they're set up for what should be an easy game today to take their 39th game of the season. First pitch is at 2:30. Craig Way will come on at 2:15. Jamie, you'll be in the suite again today as a guest of the great Jimmy Clannan.
Actually, so I'm going to hang out with the Fast Eddie.
Oh, really? Good. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, good. You guys will I know you left that game a little bit early last night so you could beat the traffic, but that KU pitcher, they kept him in there.
Poor kid.
117 pitches. I don't know why you leave him in. Maybe it's his senior year, his last collegiate game, as Craig Way mentioned, so he wants to stay in as long as he can.
There was absolutely zero movement in the bullpen. It's just coach came out in the second inning, basically came out and said, hey, you okay? Guy said, yeah, okay, you're good for until the sixth.
Well, the Titanic tied the UT single season record for home runs last night with 28. Today he'll go for 29. That record was set that included postseason play. So the Titanic, with his freakishly fast barrel speed and timing, is set to break that record in the regular season and still probably anywhere from four to, I don't know, a dozen games left in the postseason, depending on how the Horns do. They appear to be peaking at exactly the right time. They should get their 39th win of the season, sweeping Kansas today at 2:30. And
I think they broke the HR record for the team too. I think they had 105 total for the season.
It is fun to watch, fun to listen to, and it's interesting because there's a slight delay on the radio when you hear the crack of the bat, and you can actually, if you've played the game long enough, you can actually tell by the sound of the bat whether the ball was centered up or not. Kennedy hit two home runs last night. Austin Todd had one, and yeah. I mean, they were just teeing off.
Do you see what they do in the dugout after they hit the home run?
Yeah, I don't understand that. Do you know why they?
I just noticed it last night. They switch out the batting helmet for a football helmet, and they run down the dugout, and it's funny. Maybe they do it for injuries. I'm not quite sure.
Well, the Westlake Chaparral, who's pushing the buttons, as I say, it was connected to behind the glass, is Ty Henderson. Ty, do you know why they have a football helmet when they hit a dinger at the dish?
No, I really haven't really wrapped my head around that one yet. I don't think it looks particularly very cool or anything either. So,
well, it's become somewhat of a, I don't want to say tradition, but something they've been doing all year long. Craig mentioned it last night on the radio, but I just don't understand the why. There's maybe it's to I don't know to promote football. I don't know, but anyway, David Thomas. I'll ask David that today. Next Saturday, Jamie is what is that? The
Memorial Day weekend.
Is that okay? So we have no show next Saturday, but then the following Saturday, I'll be in studio with you, staying at your humble abode in East Austin. And we're going to have a great calling guest that if you're into sports memorabilia, you want to be a part of this. But let's get right to Chiso's Boots. The Chiso's Boots brings you the morning story, the most comfortable boot you can ever wear. Chiso's right there in the heart of Austin. Will Roman, go to chisos.com. And they've come up with some new leather balm to help keep your boots in great shape. And it actually works really well to break in a baseball glove. I have some of it now at our place. But that gets us to the Chiso's Boots morning story.
The morning story.
After tomorrow, I will head down to Lake Amstead. Lake Amstead on the coast the great state of Texas, and there I will have the opportunity to fish again two mornings with the great Denny Brower. Denny Brower, who is the father of jig fishing, who has been interviewed on the High Ground about a year ago. He's the only Hall of Fame bass fisherman, Major League bass fisherman, to ever appear on the cover of a box of Wheaties. And some of the stories he shared with me about Bill Dance and so many other, Roland Martin, are just fascinating. And having a bologna sandwich on the banks of Lake Amstead with Denny Brower has been one of the highlights of my fishing life. But as I was driving down to Abilene last night, I started thinking, when did I first start fishing competitively? Because I did fish competitively through junior college. In 1972, I was reminded of this, going through some old pictures. I found a check for the West Point Bass Club for $2 in 1972, made out to me. I never cashed the check, but it was for second place bluegill, a little bank fishing tournament that I was part of when I was 7 years old. So I've got that check. I'm going to have it framed and in my office. And then I flashed ahead. The summer after the year I played baseball at Ranger Junior College, I went back to West Point where my father was stationed. And I noticed in the Daily Bulletin that they were having a bass fishing tournament out at one of the lakes, Lake Popolopen at West Point. It was sponsored by the fire department. The cash prize was $300. It's a $30 entry fee. They paid first, second, and third place. I signed up for it. I had no boat, but they promised that if you signed up for the tournament, they would match you with someone who did have a boat. The night before the little tournament, I stayed up changing my lines, tying my knots, making sure all my hooks were sharp. Showed up at the tournament at 5:30, ready to go. And the tournament director handed me a letter, a handwritten note from the gentleman that I was supposed to share a boat with. And he said, "I'm sorry, I'm not going to make it today. Something's come up. I wish I could be there with you, but I'm not going to make the tournament." At which point, everyone got in their boat, and the tournament director kind of looked at me with a kind of a sad face and said, "Hey, I'm really sorry." And everyone took off to fish the tournament. And there I was on the banks of Lake Popolopen with my tackle box and two fishing rods. So I sat there for a few moments, having driven the family station wagon to the lake. I thought, well, I've got all my gear with me. I guess I could just sit here. I could go back and sign out for a rowboat, but that would take an hour and a half, and I didn't want to row a boat around Lake Popolopen. About that time, I saw a fish break the top of the water out beyond about an 80-foot dock that extended out into Lake Popolopen. And then I saw a second fish break the top of the water. I walked out on that dock, and I started noticing that there were a bunch of fish that were feeding just above the hydrilla. The hydrilla was about 6 feet tall and stopped about 6 inches below the water's surface. So I rigged up a Texas Mr. Twister worm. I put my mag force on zero and cast it as far as I could, and I raised my rod up as high as I could, and I reeled the Texas rigged worm just over the hydrilla. In a V formed behind that worm, and just as the V got to my worm, I let the worm fall, and boom, I caught a fish. And it was a weigher, about 2.5 pounds. Then I caught a second, third, fourth, fifth, and eighth bass, all weighers. At around 10 o'clock, the tournament director, who was weighing fish as the tournament progressed, came by the dock and said, "Hey, I'm really sorry your boat captain didn't show up. Are you doing okay? Do you need any water?" And I said, "Actually, I'd like to weigh some fish in." He said, "You have some fish?" And I said, "I sure do." And I pulled up a stringer and he weighed my fish. Tournament weigh-in was at 3 p.m. I continued to fish from the dock, catching some smaller fish. When all the bass fishermen came in around 2:30, I asked if I could borrow one of the contestants' boats. I knew where a big fish was that I pre-fished the week prior. I took that boat out for about 10 minutes and dropped that same Mr. Twister worm along a weed bed. Boom. 3.5 pounder. Came back in, weighed that fish, and won the tournament. Won the tournament, really without a boat. And that's the Chiso's Boots Morning Story. Jamie, those guys were mad.
Who was mad? The guys with the boats?
Those other contestants. I mean, they had Ranger bass boats and depth finders and color selectors. And here a guy standing on the bank won the dadgum tournament. We'll be back from the banks of 360 TY. Trying to keep my wife. Welcome back to the High Ground. I couldn't help but play that one, given the week of excitement in the SEC. Of course, it just means more over there. Texas will be joining the SEC very soon, along with Oklahoma, and they'll realize that it does mean more, evidently, over there. But, of course, Nick Saban and Jimbo have been in the news. We don't need to break that down anymore, but pretty fascinating week, Jamie Frazier.
I like the enthusiasm. I'm glad Jimbo, it's May, Jimbo's yelling at Saban. That's awesome.
I did talk to a couple folks who said that Jimbo actually toned it down before, that you should have seen him a few hours before that presser. So
it's May.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Hey, Lake Travis continues to rock and roll and whatnot. Their baseball team over there is just continuing to just play so well. TY, the Chaparrals were also on fire. Are they still in it? Do you know? Have you followed them?
I'm not as up to date on my Chaparral baseball as I'd like to be. So I couldn't tell you that one.
Well, they were on fire as well. I was getting some reports earlier in the week that they were still making some things happen. Our middle daughter Annie was in Tulsa this week, driving the players from the practice range, the range, if you will, to the number one tee box. And she drove John Rahm and Adam Scott. Tiger walked by, said a few words to her. They had a brief encounter, and so many others. She said it was a thrill. And she just got online and signed up months and months ago and ended up with this really great opportunity to drive the players around. She spent 2 days there. She's there again this morning before she gets on a plane and flies back to Austin. But she just talked about how really nice the players were. And some of the fans, a couple of the fans that had way too much to drink, and a couple of them popped off to Annie, our middle daughter, and said some things that were inappropriate. And one of the players, I want to find out who it is, because I'd love to write a letter to the PGA and thank that player for, he just kind of looked at those two gentlemen who were, had been overserved, and said, "Hey, that's enough. Knock it off." But she thought it was great. And there's a player there that she walked with the Scottie Scheffler's family, because Scottie Scheffler's the only Scheffler that went to the University of Texas. His sisters all went to A&M, and she spent a lot of time with the Scheffler family. And then she went and followed a player named Cameron Young, who I think is finished somewhere in the top. I think he's in the top 15, or he was as of last night. Cameron Young went to Wake Forest and then married a colonel's daughter who I served with up at West Point. But it was a great couple of days for her. And if you ever get a chance to volunteer, I guess that's I've never done it. Well, I say that I did it at Colonial when we were at TCU and got to spend a little bit of time with Fuzzy Zeller. But this tournament is a fascinating one. And Jamie, I was glad to see Tiger Woods make the cut.
Yeah, he barely made the cut. He's still deep down there. Actually, he's on the screen right now. It's interesting. Spieth still there, but you know, Zalatoris is still leading at -9, and so it should be fun to watch today, tomorrow. Have you seen Major League Baseball putting in those the new robot umps to call balls and strikes? And it's funny because the guy behind the plate has just got an earpiece. He's basically just sitting there, and he gets to, you know, act out the balls and strikes. He gets told if they're balls or strikes.
Yeah. I would love to have a shared earpiece. It would kind of like be kind of like NASCAR. Wouldn't that be cool? You could put some headphones on and listen to balls and strikes being called and see if the umpire. I did see on Twitter earlier this week that evidently there was a delay in the call. And so there's the pitch, and the umpire's just sitting there, and he doesn't make the call. And
waiting.
The catcher looks back at him. The hitter looks back at him, and he just kind of shrugs his shoulders like, nobody told me what to say.
Yeah, not my job. Yeah.
Yeah. The KU game you saw last night, when did you know the game was over?
Oh, first inning. I mean, it's 3-1, and they were looking good, and they weren't, and the bullpen wasn't moving.
And they didn't seem too terribly concerned
about it. Not really. And then, I didn't see the manager, the coach came out to the bump in the second inning, and he basically went out and said, yeah, you okay? Just left the poor kid in. It's going to be tough.
117 pitches. I think he stayed in through the sixth inning.
Yeah.
And then today will be an interesting one. I don't – you know, I went to graduate school at KU, and it was the year where they had Ray LaFrance and Jacques Vaughn, and just an incredible basketball team. But it's always perplexing to me why KU has been unable to develop success in baseball and football. I mean, it's just year after year after year. I mean, they're described as the Harvard of the Midwest. At least that's what they – you know, you hear that cliche and, you know, the great, you hear people say all the time, you know, you're a basketball school, you're basketball. Why is that though? Is it a combination?
It's location, location, location.
But Lawrence is a great town.
Right.
I mean, I'd rather be in Lawrence than, you know, a couple other schools.
Well, I don't know. If you look at the rosters, are the majority of the kids are from, are they from Kansas? Are they just local kids? They really don't recruit outside the state, or they can't compete to recruit outside the state? I don't know.
Well, Craig Way and Roger, they do such a good job explaining where most every kid comes from. For example, last night, and I didn't realize this. I don't know why. It should have been obvious. But, the Titanic, he played baseball at Odessa College. And when he broke down the Kansas players as they came to hit and came to pinch hit really late in the game, as KU just continued to send pinch hitters up there to be victims of the Longhorn closer, he would say, you know, a local product out of Lawrence or, you know, out of Caney or out of, you know, all over Kansas. And it appeared that at least half of them were recruited in state, which I don't know how many great players Kansas, the high school players Kansas has produced, but it just seems to me that, you know, when you're in the Big 12 and you've got so much talent available to you, I don't know why Kansas can't have a competitive baseball program. Football would be a whole nother story. I mean, it gets into facilities and that stadium, but they're renovating that. And I think it comes down to leadership too. When you look at the number of ADs that they've had there, and how quick they were, you know, to get rid of somebody who I felt was going to get some things going, which was Dave Beatty, who's from Texas, out of Garland. I don't know. It's just a mystery to me why some schools are, you know, how is Gonzaga so competitive in baseball, and Kansas, who can draw from the great state of Texas if they wanted to, can be so poor. They're not going to make the Big 12 tournament. Big 12 tournament starts this Wednesday. It looks like the Longhorns will play the 9 a.m. game Wednesday, which will be, as Craig stated last night, you know, the 4 or 5 seed, depending on how things break out today. But I don't know. I don't know. How when you look at – I mean, look at all the schools in California. I mean, UC Davis, pretty good baseball program.
Yeah, they never really followed them that much, but – They have a good program out there, but most of the recruits are coming from California there, especially. But they're not a premier baseball team. So,
how did Ty? Could you look up, please, see how the Aggies did last night? That they were down a run or two to Mississippi State yesterday. They won their first game, but this will determine the seeding or whether or not really if A&M has a chance to be one of the, you know, top eight seeds as the NCAA tournament looms, the announcement of the brackets will come next weekend after all the conference tournaments are completed.
Texas A&M beat Ole Miss 10-5 yesterday.
Wow. That was yesterday?
Oh, that was Thursday. Hold on. Yeah. Let me get back to you one second.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. Get back to me on that.
How are the Horny Frogs doing there this year?
The Horned Frogs have guaranteed themselves a share of first place. It will depend on really what Oklahoma and Texas Tech do today, whether or not they have sole possession of first place. So they'll be either the number one or number two seed in the tournament. I say they could be the number two seed because it's really dependent of the Oklahoma and Texas Tech game three. If Oklahoma wins, then TCU will be the number two seed. But they have assured themselves at least of a share of the Big 12 regular season championship. And I suspect they will host a regional, although they certainly will not be one of the top eight seeds.
What's that? What's the stadium fit up there? Does it get over 7,000?
No. And that's a challenge for Kirk Sarlos. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jim Schlossnagel left TCU and went to A&M, his first year of A&M this year, is that he wanted a bigger stadium to draw more. And they had been drawing really well. And, of course, the stadium that they have today looks nothing like the stadium that I played on in the Southwest Conference days. But the stadium is great, but it's no Dish. It's no Mississippi State. It's no Texas A&M, you know, Bluebell Diamond. It's none of that. So TCU does. I think there's a plan in place where they're going to expand or make bigger and large, whatever it is, their stadium there at TCU. But I think, Jamie, to your point, I think the max it could seat is like 6,000 and some change.
Okay. So, they're bringing that up too against with Texas State because their stadium only holds like 2,500. That if Texas State does get a regional, they may actually play it up here at Dish Falk.
Yep. So A&M lost last night to Mississippi State. Matters a little bit whether or not A&M will get a top eight seed. But you're right about Texas State. What they're probably going to do if Texas State, and I think they deserve it, but part of the bid process is what type of facilities do you have? If they can only seat currently 2,500, part of their bid needs to be, we're prepared to invest and bring in temporary seating all around, you know, the stadium to get that up to, I don't know, 5,000, maybe 6,000. If you look at the PGA championship in Tulsa right now, you see all of these temporary buildings and bleachers that have been set up. They look really nice. They do the same thing for the Colonial Golf Tournament in Fort Worth. So Texas State probably has made that part of their bid, because when you have 2,500 in your stadium, it makes it really difficult to host a regional. We'll be back from the banks of 360. T.Y.
Here we go. A 1-2. It was a
You never can tell where we're going to come to you from live. You can always count on Zoom. Christ, try to be saucy to be there in studio holding the fourth down and TY, pushing the buttons. I'm in Abilene, Texas today for the Air It Out Academy. I'll be heading back to Austin in about a week and a half, where I've got an appointment with Dr. Eckert, UECKERT, the horn dentist. And then I'll be staying with you, Jamie, and be there for about 3-4 days. Really, we've got a I hope we get a chance to go get a little pork chop over there.
Where, at Perry's?
Yeah, I hope that I've just
got Pork Chop Friday?
Every once in a while, you got to get a pork chop. I don't know if I can do the Friday. I've got to go out to the Lake Buchanan to do something with a friend of mine who's doing a leadership exercise out at the M5, M's and Mike, M5 Ranch. But I do want to go to Perry's if you and I can figure out a way to do that either Thursday night, the 2nd of June, or maybe the 4th of June, Saturday. But we're going to have it'll be right in the middle of the Big 12 tournament. The first game starts this Wednesday, but we'll get to watch some good baseball while I'm there with you, and hopefully I'll be able to get in your
Once
was a hot tub, now is a cold tub.
You can go see the daughters, the two girls we got here?
Yeah, the two daughters living there in Austin. The other one will soon be living in Houston. The one that just graduated, she will go to work for Hershey, the Hershey Company in Houston. Shameless plug for the middle daughter. You know, who says that Aggies and Longhorns can't work together? Right there in Austin, you've got Aggies and Longhorns that started the company Rev Gum, caffeinated sugar-free gum, and they've grown that thing into a juggernaut. And it is an extraordinary product available at Bucky's and 7-Eleven and all the truck stops. And it's become a big, big thing, and it continues to thrive. And they are headed to Chicago next week, the Rev Gum leadership team, for the world's largest, who knew, the world's largest snacks and sweets convention is up in Chicago. And for those of you keeping score at home, you should be. Yes, I did give a safety brief to Annie when she's up in Chicago. Of course, she's 25 years old now, so she kind of knows where to go, what to do. But evidently in Chicago, this huge snacks and sweets convention lasts a week up there, and the Rev Gum folks right there in Austin are headed up there to talk about Rev Gum. It's amazing what they've done with that. It just goes to show you entrepreneurial leadership and the can-do spirit in the great state is alive and well. It doesn't surprise me that Texas continues to thrive, given all the challenges.
Well, how's the Colonel's golf game doing up there, Colonel Donahue's?
So the Green Beret, who just started to practice golf a year ago, is figuring some things out. He's seeing the ball a little differently than he did a year ago, which is normal. He continues to develop. He had three chances at his first birdie last week, and he ended up three putting all three chances. But he hadn't gotten a birdie yet. He has gotten one par, but he's working hard. Remember, he was challenged with eye cancer. So he starts to learn golf and suddenly he gets eye cancer. And now about every 3 months or so, he's got to go to a doctor and literally get a shot in the eye after getting some radiation done. And he's doing well, but I guess he's playing golf, you know, with one eye. So he's a one-eye golfer right now. But, man, he just continues to battle. And what he refuses to do is allow the game to get emotional about it. He doesn't allow his amygdala to get hijacked. Kind of like you, Jamie, just very cool, calm, collective. Of course, we're trained in that. Just does not allow little things to bother him on the golf course. And you can actually see, even with these pros, Jamie, I just saw one here. I'm watching the tournament. When the instant that they allow stacking to start to occur on that part of the brain called the amygdala, and it starts to frustrate them. And you can just see in their body language when mentally they've allowed something to get in their head. And the danger with that is you can allow it to impact the next decision, the next shot. And in the case of families, you end up, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back, you end up snapping at somebody that you end up loving, that you really love or you trust. And that can just destroy a relationship and it just starts with self-awareness first and then situational awareness, something you talk about all the time. You're very similar on the golf course. You don't allow bad shots to impact you.
That's because I bring like 24 or 30 balls with me and I play nine holes and I don't go look for my ball if I hit it out of bounds. I just drop another one.
You know, if it were me, Jamie, I think we agree on this. I kind of wish golf was 12 holes.
Nine's perfect for me.
Six and six, but because I've noticed with me right about hole number 12, I got to really start battling to stay focused. It just goes on and on. I would rather play nine than 18.
I think there should be more windmills and clown heads out there. You know,
of course, the reason it is 18 holes was because in a bottle of whiskey when golf was invented was because there were 18 shots of whiskey in a bottle. And so they, when they invented the game, they came up with, now we're going to do it 18 times. Robin Williams, of course, does a great job breaking that down. What time are you headed over to the dish today, Jane?
Actually going to be over there right after the show. I'm going to go home and take care of my pup and then head over there. They're having a crawfish boil before the game. So I'll be there about noon.
I wonder, I would love to see if you can find out what they paid per pound for that crawfish, because I've been on the front end of this thing down in Louisiana, and the crawfish farmers, at least last month, were only getting $1.50 a pound for their harvest, and indicators were that it was going to go down to $1 a pound. So when I go to a restaurant, and I understand all the costs involved in that, but when I see it getting as high as $12 a pound, that's a bit much. That's kind of silly. So I'd be curious to know what – they probably bought bags of it. I mean, that Occupy Right Field, which is where I think you're going, is they probably bought several bags of it.
Well, we do have an inflation problem, so I can tell you.
Yeah. Big challenge. Yeah. I just saw Tiger. Tiger was on the green in regulation. Man, he really is. You see him limping around. I mean, you've got your own challenges with a foot. You see him limping around like that. Golly, just.
Yeah, he got a little bit upset on Thursday. I guess his leg was bothering him, and he kind of snapped at a cameraman. But you know, it's the life of the PGA. He'll be fine. He made the cut. I wonder why he picked this one to come back, another one to come back in. I understand he came back for the Masters, but you know, it's gotta be tough hauling around with his all his leg conditions and, you know, walking the whole 18.
It says Southern Hills, but it's really a kind of a flat course. It's extraordinarily long. It's a Perry Maxwell course, and the head pro there is a Cosby. Cosby's a big name in the state of Oklahoma. Jerry Cosby was, you know, one of the longtime pros in the great state, particularly around some of the Perry Maxwell courses. Hillcrest is one that stands out. And now I think Cosby was actually a Tiger's caddy on one of the practice rounds. So it's a long, long, long course, but it's predominantly flat. So I don't know. It's one of his favorite courses. Next year, the PGA is going to be up in Rochester, New York. The biggest fear for the PGA is that in the month of May, there is no guarantee that Rochester will not produce snow. I mean, they still get snow in the month of May in Rochester.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be a big challenge. I'm watching this putt roll for Tiger right now. I don't know where he is on. I think he's plus 6 or 7, something like that. McIlroy tees off at 2:30. I love the way he swings the golf club.
Yeah, Tiger's plus 8. It's a good 17 points off the lead.
All right, when we come back from the banks of 360, it'll be what we all wait for from the high ground, and that is the Texas Wine of the Week brought to you by Jamie Frazier. We'll be back.
The Texas Wine of the Week. Goes to my head. Makes me forget that I still need her so
much. Red, red wine. Oh, yes. You hear that, you know we are supporting Texas grape growers and wine makers. He has a palate like no other. He is a wine lover and then a lover out of East Austin, the voice of the Texas Wine of the Week. He brings it to you every Saturday morning. Jamie. French. And not so much in French.
Well, Colonel, the wine of the week, the Brent Dickey Memorial Texas Wine of the Week. Brent is no longer with us. He was last seen at the Round Rock Donuts in a sugar coma with a 24-count box on his belly.
Oh, wow.
2018 Fall Creek Vineyards GSM Salt Lick Vineyards. Stunning wow. Red with a cherry-dried lavender and a faint vanilla leads to a sophisticated structure with lush, juicy red fruits, a perfect burger wine. And that is the Brent Dickey Memorial Texas Wine of the Week, 2018 Fall Creek Vineyards GSM from Salt Lick Vineyards.
Wow, I like my vanilla faint.
Yeah.
That, you know, you don't want to, not too much. You don't want it to be too strong.
No.
You want a faint vanilla, but particularly with a burger wine.
A perfect burger wine. That's what they say, a perfect burger wine. I don't know what an imperfect burger wine would be, but this is the perfect one.
When we lived in France, I served some wine to this French snob. I say snob because he was a snob. And we had, Miss Betta tried to make a brisket in France, which is really hard to do. But she had a valiant effort at it. And we had jalapenos that we had gotten, I think, from the U.S. Embassy or something, where they happen to have some dried jalapenos or something. You know, you can't get the things that we get in Texas when you live in France. And we served wine with it. And this Frenchie man, he got all over me for serving a wine with something really spicy, telling me that I had ruined the wine. And I said, well, okay. What do you think of the brisket? And that was the last time we had him over for dinner. But this morning at Air It Out, I thought this was funny. I'm standing there with Cody Hodges and David Thomas, and Coach Wardis is introducing the staff and talking to all the quarterbacks and receivers and the parents that are there. And he talks about how much fun high school football is, and it's going to be the funnest time, most fun you'll ever have in your life. And he's going on and on, and he points to David and he says, you know, Coach Thomas over there, you know, he played against, you know, Coach Hodges in high school, and that's the most fun he's had every, you know, ever playing football. And David Thomas, you know, he kind of leans down to me and he goes, well, I don't know, winning a Super Bowl was sort of a lot more fun.
Did you see where Nike signed those two high school athletes?
No.
Yeah. Contract.
From where?
Two soccer players from California. It's legal there. So.
Are they playing in college?
They're still in high school.
Yeah. Oh, and Nike just signed them right out of high school.
They're still in high school, yeah.
Well, I know players are getting offered in the 7th and 8th grade now, even in baseball. It's cray-cray, Jamie.
Yeah.
Well, see, my friend, enjoy the game. 39th win today, nearly guaranteed for the Longhorns against the Kansas Jayhawks, right there in your hometown, nearly across the street from where Jamie Frazier drowns his body in a cold tub nearly every 100-day temperature day in Texas. Jamie, I'll see you soon.
See ya.
Just before you draw your terminal breath.